Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, old sports, and welcome to another edition of the Hello, Old Sports podcast on the Sports History Network. October is upon us, which means probably the best sports month of the entire year, and first and foremost in that, obviously,
I don't know. I haven't been too thrilled with it before.
Yeah, well, the Giants. Yeah, if you're a New York sports fan, this has been. I was texting with some buddies the other day, some friends from high school, and it was just about how horrible, and yet another horrible year in New York sports. Mets, Yankees, Knicks. Well, not so much the Knicks. Mets, Yankees, Jets, Giants, and then who knows what the fall sports are going to be. But yeah, the Giants are a dismal 1-3. And somebody sent me a message the other day, as we completely digress here, that there's only two teams in all of the NFL that have not run a single offensive play while having a lead, and those two teams are the Giants and the Jets. So it's been a tough month so far for New York sports and New York football specifically.
And New York baseball, too, mostly in the absence of it.
But we are going to focus on some good things about October and finish up. We got a few really good baseball themed episodes coming your way over the next month. And we are going to start with episode 5 and soon on its heels, episode 6 of our all time starting nines for the various baseball franchises in the various divisions in Major League Baseball. And up next for this episode, one that is near and dear to our hearts, and that is the American League East.
Yeah, and we kind of, when we decided to do this, the natural way to go was to just kind of go, well, AL East, NL East, you know, start it that way. And that's why we kind of mixed them up. And that's why the last two we have left are kind of juicy ones. Although when we talk about the NL West, we'll talk about some issues. But yeah, this is, you know, in a lot of ways, I don't know if it's the best one to do. The NL Central had so much history in all these teams, but, you know, certainly just by virtue of really the top even three teams, when you consider the Orioles, you know, you certainly have a lot of all-time great players to talk about. So, you know, it's definitely a one of the better divisions to be doing.
Just to recap, and I won't give the full lineups in this episode, but winners so far, the Atlanta Braves, the Detroit Tigers, the St. Louis Cardinals, and the Philadelphia, Kansas City, Oakland Athletics. So those have been the four teams that have made it so far. And we are going to add a fifth here in just a minute.
Yep. Spot's vacant, but we'll take care of that all right now. So do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
You know, why don't I let you go first? And so for those who haven't listened to previous episodes, Andrew will go first. He'll pick a team. He will tell me who his starting nine are, and then we will talk about our various points of agreement and disagreement. And if there's some sort of a resolution that we need to come to, we'll deal with that as well. So why don't you pick a team and go ahead?
All right. I'm going to start with the Orioles, actually, who carry the history of the St. Louis Browns, such as it is, from the early 20th century until 1954, when they relocated to Baltimore. Very scant Brown representation in mine, at least. But let's go ahead and I'll read them off. And again, we do position players, no DH, and just one pitcher. So that's how we do this. Catcher, I have Chris Hoyles. First base, George Sisler. Second base, Bobby Gritch. Shortstop, Cal Ripken Jr. Third base, Brooks Robinson. Outfield, Frank Robinson, Paul Blair, Boog Powell. And then the pitcher is Jim Palmer.
All right. So I think we are in agreement on six. No, I'm sorry. Yes, yeah, six of these. So
okay. So let me guess real quick. I'm guessing Sisler, Ripken, Robinson, Robinson, and Palmer are five of them.
So Sisler is actually not one of them.
Oh, okay.
And maybe this is where we should start, because I went into this fully expecting to select George Sisler. George Sisler, who played 12 of his 15 seasons with the old St. Louis Browns of the American League, did not appear in a single postseason, didn't win a single pennant, played on some very bad St. Louis teams, although they did finish second in 1922 with a 93-61 record, second only to Babe Ruth and the New York Yankees. Sisler was MVP that year in 1922. He led the league in batting average with a .420 batting average. He had hit .407 2 years previous. Lifetime .340 batting average, has just short of 3,000, or not just short, but basically a season or so short. He's got 2,812 career hits. He held, I think he held a record, a single season record for hits. The 257, I believe his 257 in 1920 was a record until 2001 when Ichiro came along. So a very good player. And actually, I should say it. Ichiro did break that record, but it wasn't until 2004. It was not in Ichiro's rookie year of 01. So I went into this fully expecting to pick George Sisler. But the more that I looked at it, the more I really sort of was moved towards Eddie Murray. So in WAR, which is something we've used as sort of a general basis for these things, Eddie Murray's WAR in 13 years with Baltimore was 56.5. Sisler's was in 12 years with St. Louis was 52.5. So Murray is a little bit better there. Sisler obviously has him in batting average with a .287 average for Eddie Murray and a .344 average for George Sisler. So he's got him by almost 60 points there. But to me, the RBIs, 962 for Sisler. And if I'm remembering correctly, I haven't looked at this in a few days, but Eddie Murray's got him beaten. Eddie Murray's got 1,224 RBIs, 343 home runs for Eddie Murray to less than 100 for George Sisler. Eddie Murray was on championship and World Series teams with the Baltimore Orioles. Maybe there's a slight bias on my part towards the fact that we're talking about the Orioles and not talking about the St. Louis Browns. But I just, the more I looked at it, even though it surprised me, Eddie Murray just kind of jumped out and made the case.
Well, I think with RBIs, you have to factor in the guys he was. He probably had a lot more RBI opportunities than George Sisler did. Sisler, obviously the leader in hits. He's also the team leader in stolen bases. Not, I mean, 351, not that that's, you know, he's got 44 more than Brady Anderson, but he is the team's all-time leader in stolen bases. He's third all-time in hits behind just Ripken and, I believe, let me pull this up here, third all-time in hits behind just Ripken and Brooks Robinson. He's got on base percentage, batting average, he's second all time. He's, you know, significantly ahead of Eddie Murray there. So I think when you look at the power numbers, obviously you're going to favor Murray because of the era he was in, but I don't know. I don't know that when you look at offensive WAR, they're within 2 points of each other. Sisler at 50.2, Murray 51.9. I guess I just felt if we're going to have anybody from the front, and I know Eddie Murray's a great player. He also didn't exclusively do it with the Orioles. You know, the best years of his career were with the Orioles, but he was a Dodger. He was a Met. He was an Indian. Most of those teams at least twice. I get it. And I wouldn't argue so vehemently against Murray, but I just feel like if you factor in sort of adjusting, okay, Murray's power numbers dwarf him, but power numbers from everybody in that era. Again, Sisler also started his career in the dead ball era. It's not like he just played in the 20s and 30s when the power was exploding. You know, he had years where he hit 420 and things like that. So while I understand Murray, and I think maybe a lot of people would come down on that way, I don't know. I still think I would give it to Sisler just for his... I think George Sisler was a higher to the top in his era than Eddie Murray was in his.
You might be right about that. And I can give in on that one. Now, I will say that when we get to some of our other points of disagreement on this one, I actually do have another St. Louis Brown. But
okay.
So I can give in on Sisler. The rest of the infield, we were in lockstep. Gritch, Ripken, Brooks Robinson, who just passed away about a week ago as we're recording this. I mean, maybe the most beloved Baltimore Oriole of all time. And we will say a lot more about him towards the end of the year when we do our in memoriam. But we were in agreement there. I obviously had Jim Palmer, who is, I think, he's still around in baseball. He's still doing color commentary for Orioles TV broadcast. So a guy who at 77 years of age is still very much involved with the team. He won 3 Cy Young Awards in 4 years. He is one of the few players to appear in a World Series in 3 different decades. He has been on the field for every single World Series that the Baltimore Orioles have appeared in, and that's 66, 69, 70, 71, 79 and 83 when they won it with Cal Ripken. So he is sort of Mr. Oriole. He played with all these guys. He played with Brooks. He played with Frank. He played with Book Powell. He played with Ripken. He was managed by Earl Weaver. He played with Eddie Murray. So if there's anybody who sort of epitomizes the Orioles, it would be Jim Palmer, in my opinion. I should also note, and it's a sort of especially poignant with Brooks Robinson passing recently, about 10 years ago, Allison and I, my wife and I, went to an Oriole Red Sox game right at the end of the season, and they were doing some sort of a ceremony, and the six Orioles with their numbers retired, the six sort of beloved guys, Frank Robinson, Brooks Robinson, Cal Ripken, Eddie Murray, Earl Weaver, and Jim Palmer, each came out driven in a separate car, and we were in good seats. We were only like 8 rows back from the field, and so these guys were all right in front of us, and it really... And I've learned about this more having lived in now in the Baltimore area. They really do love some of those guys. Now, Weaver, both Robinsons have since passed away, but those guys are all just so beloved in Baltimore. And so we don't have Murray. It's good that we have as many of the others as we can have on our team. So I'm with you there. I'm with you on 2 of the outfielders. I was with you on Paul Blair. I was with you on Frank Robinson. So that just leaves one outfield spot. And you said you had Chris Hoyles.
No, I had Chris Hoyles, catcher.
I'm sorry. I moved it in my mind. Let's do catcher first. And you said you had Chris Hoyles, right?
Yeah, it's not very good. Their catching history is really not very good. I looked at this was probably the one I looked at the longest with the Orioles, you know, and looking at all the other all-time teams that people have made and looking at Browns and things like that. I didn't find much here.
So I think this is one where I am going to push back a little bit. And I went with Rick Dempsey, who, and I should also note that I'm using, as I always do, Tom Stone's great book, Now Taking the Field, Baseball's All-Time Dream Teams for All 30 Franchises. So Hoyles was with the Baltimore Orioles basically in the 90s. He was with the team from 89 to 98, his whole career, whole 10-year career. Never made an All-Star team, never won a Gold Glove. His career WAR for the 10 years is 23.5. That's a little higher than Dempsey's 21.3. But Dempsey won a World Series with the team in 83. He was also the MVP of that World Series. The WAR is close, 21.3 to 23.5. Batting average, Hoyles got him by like 25 points. Hoyles has got him almost doubled in home runs. So when we're, and let me look at RBIs here real quickly, although I'm guessing that neither one is anything crazy. 355 for Dempsey and 449 for Hoyles. So almost 100 more. I think I would still push to go with Dempsey because, like you said, neither guy really jumps off the page. But Dempsey won a World Series, was MVP of that World Series. So I do think that there's nothing wrong with sort of, in case of a tie, going with the guy who had the big moment.
And it seems like Dempsey's regarded as a much better defensive catcher, too. So, yeah, I'm fine with that. It's like I said, Dempsey was the other one I considered. It's not a strong position, so I'm absolutely okay with going with that.
And you said you went Boog Powell in the outfield.
Yes.
Now, I think of Powell as mostly a first baseman. He played 430 games in left field. Then that's basically his whole outfield career, mostly at the very beginning of his career in the early 60s before moving on to first base, when that was where he was when he won his MVP award. That was where he was when the Orioles made it to three straight World Series in the late 60s and early 70s. I went with a guy from the St. Louis Browns by the name of Ken Williams, who is not in the Hall of Fame, but was a left fielder. And it's one of these people that a lot of people think that they maybe should be in the Hall of Fame. He's a career 319 hitter and was actually a little bit higher than that in his St. Louis career. He hit 150 in 1922, the year we're talking about, the year that Sisler won MVP. He led the American League with 39 home runs and 155 RBIs. Let me just look at the WAR for the two here. And incidentally, when I do this, I'm sometimes going back and forth between Baseball Reference and Tom Stone's book. So if the WAR numbers are slightly different, I apologize. 40.5 with the team for Ken Williams. And let me see what Powell's got as far as WAR is concerned with the team. 35.5. So it's actually higher for Williams. I think the reason I would push for Williams, not just because of the slightly higher WAR, neither man is in the Hall of Fame. They're both sort of a step below that. But the fact that Williams was an outfielder for all of his career and Powell really was not, I know that's another thing that we sort of cheat on sometimes, but I feel like it's also one of those things where maybe when it's close, we should take it into account.
By the way, Ken Williams, Ruth tied a guy named Tilly Walker in 1988 when Ruth was still a pitcher for the league lead in home runs.
1918.
Then 1919, 1920, 1921, it was Ruth. Ken Williams in 22. Ruth in 23 and 24. Bob Musial, another Yankee, in 25. And then Ruth every year from 26 to 30 until him and Gehrig tied in 31. So the only non-Yankee to win this award or non-Babe Ruth for quite a while there. So
the only guy who wasn't Babe Ruth and wasn't a teammate of Babe Ruth, put it that way.
Yes. So, yeah, I'm fine with that. I guess I didn't realize. I'd seen Powell listed as an outfielder a few places. I guess I didn't realize that was really concentrated early in his career. So I'm fine with going with Ken Williams.
All right. So our Baltimore Orioles team, Rick Dempsey, George Sisler, Bobby Gritch, Brooks Robinson, Cal Ripken Jr., Frank Robinson, Ken Williams, Paul Blair, and Jim Palmer.
And strong team. It is a very strong team.
It is a very strong team. We go long enough with these podcasts, and I don't think it's spoiling anything to say that they're not going to win, but it'd be interesting to think about if there were divisions that maybe they could win or at least come close in.
Yeah.
All right, so it's my turn. Why don't we go with the Toronto Blue Jays? And I'm going to say Pat Borders, Carlos Delgado, Roberto Alomar, Yankee legend Josh Donaldson, Tony Fernandez.
At third.
Correct.
I write these down, shortstop, third base, mm-hmm. so that's where I was getting confused. Okay, go ahead, sorry.
Tony Fernandez, Jose Bautista, Jesse Barfield, George Bell, and at pitcher I have Roy Halladay.
So we agree on seven of the nine. I have the same outfield as you, or infield as you, Delgado, Alomar, Fernandez, Donaldson. Alomar, yeah, he's barely there, but he's there. He's good enough. There's nobody really in his stead to take. Bautista, George Bell, I don't think there's much discussion on. Roy Halladay, no discussion there. So the two I had different, you said you had Jesse Barfield in the outfield, right?
Correct.
So I went with Vernon Wells in the outfield, and it was close between him and Barfield. Let me just pull up the Blue Jays all time, the top 50. So if you have anything handy on that while I'm pulling up that, but that's who I went with.
I was between those two also. Barfield, 9 years, 29.5 war. Vernon Wells, 12 years, 28.7 war. I really see that. I really feel that maybe I just probably went with like the slightly higher war. Vernon Wells, definitely the better power numbers, although really not by a ton. I mean, nine years, 179 homers for Barfield, which averages to just under 20 a year. With Wells, it's 12 years and 223 home runs, which actually is less. It's less than 20 a year. Average 280 versus 265. He won three Gold Glove awards with the Blue Jays. I don't know if Barfield won two Gold Glove awards. You know who he was traded for the Yankees for in 1989?
I don't. Who?
Al Leiter. So just a name that would later come back in Yankee history. Yeah, I mean, this is really, really close. I don't know. Vernon Wells had more steals. I don't know. Vernon Wells played center field, and we already have a right fielder in Bautista. This is a pick 'em for me. Flip a coin. I'm good with whatever.
And the baseball egg one doesn't help us because they have both of them and made Jose Bautista a third baseman, which doesn't really help us solve this at all.
You know, and I thought about doing that, but Bautista did not have much actual time at third base at all. I was double checking these this afternoon, and I tried to get there with that, and I just couldn't. And, you know, even though Yankee fans might have a certain opinion of Josh Donaldson, the guy did win an MVP when he was on Toronto, and I don't know. I think that might be the only position player in Toronto ever to win an MVP. So I feel like we almost have to keep Donaldson on there. So
I agree. I guess let's go with Barfield. I don't have a particular reason, but I guess let's go with Jesse Barfield.
All right. And then it sounds like based on what you said that you also disagreed at catcher.
Yeah, and who did you have?
I had Pat Borders, and I have sort of
Go ahead. I went with Ernie Witt.
Tom Stone in his book also went with Ernie Witt. Ernie Witt by far had the most seasons with the team, 12 years, only a 19.3 war in those 12 seasons, so a less than two war. Let me see with Witt if I want to see just kind of what his... You know, did he ever make an all-star? He was a one-time all-star. He's got a great mustache. And it looks like he was a left-handed hitter, too. The reason I went with Borders was never, and this is sort of very similar to what I went with Rick Dempsey. Borders, never an all-star, never a Gold Glover. Witt was not ever a Gold Glover either. But Borders was the catcher for both of the Blue Jays World Series appearances and titles in their whole history. Plus he was MVP of, I think it was the first one, if I'm remembering correctly. I think he was the MVP of the 92 World Series. Yeah, the very first one. In that 92 World Series against Atlanta, he hit 450.
Jesus.
Yeah, not great power numbers, but that's that. Incidentally, if you're interested in a little trivia, if the Braves had won that World Series, most people think that Deion Sanders would have been the MVP of that series, because he hit like 500.
And Pat Borders would, and Pat Borders would be the head football coach at Colorado now, probably.
So yeah, I guess I would push for Borders just because he. There's mediocrity there, and he was a World Series MVP, one of only two in franchise history. So that's where I would go with it.
All right. I'm willing to go there. I'm willing to go with Borders as well. We agreed on seven of them. We agreed that Barfield and really the catcher and the third outfielder were really splitting hairs. So especially with Borders, I think I agree with you. You go with the guy. I didn't realize he was had that kind of a World Series. So.
Incidentally, Tony Fernandez, four different stints with the Toronto Blue Jays in his career. So he makes it on, if not for anything else, than just for longevity. So Pat Borders, Carlos Delgado, Roberto Alomar, Josh Donaldson, Tony Fernandez, Jose Bautista, Jesse Barfield, George Bell, and the Hall of Famer Roy Halladay. So just real quick, two Hall of Famers on this team, Alomar and Halladay. The previous one had Palmer, Robinson, Ripken, Robinson, Sisler's. They got five. So, all right. So you are up next. And where do you want to take us next?
I'm going to go with the Rays here just to do it this way. So we have the Yankees and the Red Sox last. I wrote a note here. I did this a couple of weeks ago, and I was trying to figure out what my note meant. And I realize what it is now. The Rays were one of the more infuriating ones to do for this because, you know, okay, you're looking at you're searching the internet, all-time teams, whatever. If somebody made it for the Yankees or the Red Sox or even a team like the Royals or whatever, if they made this in 2015, you can still use it. You can't use anything that's more than 2 years old for the Rays. They all have to be like brand new lists, or it's like, it's basically useless. You know, the Rays, most of the Rays have existed entirely within the internet era. I don't think there was a lot of all-time Rays teams being put up in 2003, but like you could find ones for most of their history. So you really need to, you know, there's so much less source material in more ways than one.
I think I have a book of all-time teams somewhere that is from like 2003. I think it's Rob Nayers, however he pronounces his name, big book of baseball lineups. And there's an all-time Rays team. And it's like Boggs and Jose Canseco and some of those guys. The other thing too, is that even though they're out on their butts already in this postseason on, 7:30 on October 4th, they've been so good the last 5 or 6 years, including even a trip to the World Series 3 years ago. So you really do have to keep it updated as far as what's going on. So, and even like the book that I have, I think was written after the 18 season. So like you said, for most of the teams, it's perfect. You just have to do a little bit of checking up, but for this one, not so much. So let's have it.
All right. And the second note I have here with Jason. So the catcher I have is Jason Bartlett, and my parentheses say made as I'm assuming one of those as's means all-star. First base, Carlos Pena. Second base, Ben Zobrist. Shortstop, Julio Lugo. Third baseman, Evan Longoria. Outfielders, Carl Crawford, Kevin Kiermaier, BJ Upton. And my pitcher is David Price. And if you're in agreement with me, anywhere between three and eight of these, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, then you're not going to be surprised, because I am in agreement with you on eight of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. David Price. It was really, really close for me between David Price and Blake Snell. And let me just pull up a quick comparison here. Both were on World Series teams. Snell was on this team in 2020. Was Snell the one, and I really should remember this, but I kind of think I've blocked all 2020 sports out of my mind. Snell was the one that they pulled in that last game of the World Series against the Dodgers, even though he was pitching so well, right?
That sounds right, yeah. Now he's with the Padres.
So Snell won a Cy Young with the Rays in 2018 with a really great year, 21-5 and a 1.89 ERA. Price also won a Cy Young in 2012 with an almost as good year. He also led the American League in both wins with 20-5 record and a 2.56 ERA. He later went on to sign with the Red Sox and ended up missing time because he injured himself playing Xbox. But that's a story for another time. So, and he was a durable guy with Tampa too. You know, I'm seeing starts of 31, 34, 31, 34. It was really close for me between these two guys. 82-47 record for Price in his time with Tampa. Snell, I think, maybe as a function of the fact that there was a COVID year and he had some injuries, he was only 42-30. So if you're looking for one dominant season, it's Snell. But if you're looking for a lot of really good years with the Tampa Bay Rays, it's David Price. So that was where I went there.
Yeah, and he was like their ace when they started to get good. Like, honestly, that would be an interesting thing to do one time, is an episode on the 2008 Rays. Like, that was so out of nowhere. They had been in the league 10 years and lost 100 and however many games every year. And all of a sudden they're in the World Series. Like,
I think my favorite story about that team is that casinos in Las Vegas stopped giving like crazy odds for teams to win championships. Like, they used to give odds or make the World Series or something like that. Like, they'd give an odd like that the Tampa Bay Rays would win, you know, would, you know, be like 5,000-1 underdogs. 5,000-1. Yeah. You know, it'd be 5,000-1 odds. So somebody'd make a $100 bet, they'd win $50,000. So it would be,
and it's like, are you going to get that many less people if it's 500-1 odds, but you won't have to, you know what I mean? Like, you'll still get people putting down money on a long shot, but if you do have to pay it out, it's not going to be, you know, six figures or whatever.
And I misspoke. $100 bet would have brought you $500,000, not $50,000. So, wow. Longoria, somebody else we should probably mention. He's probably the best position player in Rays history. He was the first guy to be really good on the team. He came up in 08 as a rookie. He was rookie of the year on that team that made it all the way to the World Series against Philly in 2008. And then I was with you on Crawford, Kiermaier, and on BJ Upton. So
Kiermaier was a phenomenal defender, by the way.
Yeah, he won a bunch of gold gloves, right?
I knew he used to rob the Yankees constantly, but
three-time gold gloves. He's also listed as having won a platinum glove on Baseball Reference, which I have to admit, I do not know what that is.
I think that's the best overall fielder of the year, probably in each league, but
yeah. So yeah, he's a good player. Just left the team to go to Toronto at the beginning of this past season, which means that he, unlike his former Rays teammates, is still alive in the postseason.
You want to check that again?
Toronto's not in the postseason, are they?
Not as of 25 minutes ago.
Did they just lose to Minnesota?
They lost to Minnesota, yes.
Oh, I didn't realize that game was over. Okay, that's we can leave that in. I thought I had made up that they weren't in the postseason. Like, I'm sure they were. I thought I was watching them today. So, yeah, they're in. Or they're out now. But so who did you have as your catcher? Because that's the one place we disagreed.
I had Jason Bartlett.
So I had Deonner Navarro, who was on the team. I didn't even remember this. He came up with the Yankees. He was on Tampa Bay for 5 years, won a Gold Glove Award. He was the catcher on the 08 team that went to the World Series. Total WAR for him in those seasons was, am I reading this right? His WAR for all the seasons was 1.9. Ugh. All right, this might be one where I give in to you. You said Bartlett.
Yeah, let me pull this up.
Jason Bartlett. Okay. Jason Bartlett, also a one-time All-Star, was on the team. He was also on the – these guys were both on the 08 team, it looks like. They were teammates. Only with the Rays do you get two guys who were teammates at the same position competing for the same spot. And one of these guys must have played another position, because Bartlett appeared in 128 games in 2008, and Navarro appeared in 120. So, yeah, at least one of those guys must have. You said Jason Bartlett?
Hang on. I might have written this down wrong. He's like a shortstop, isn't he?
Yeah.
Did I fill this in wrong? Who the heck is their all-time catcher? It's very possible that I just, this was the end of this, and I just was tired of it. and I was looking at the wrong page. All-time rate.
Did you mean Toby Hall?
Very possibly. Let's just go with the guy you wrote, because he seems like he played that position.
Yeah, let me just look up Toby Hall real quick here. Never an All-Star.
I didn't do that on purpose, but I probably did it. He was probably the last one I had listed. And
yeah, like,
he was probably go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to do it for a team, the Rays catcher is probably the place to do it. Toby Hall's got a higher WAR, but first of all, you didn't name Toby Hall. You named a shortstop. And second of all, Deonor Navarro was the catcher on that team that made the World Series, was a one-time All-Star, which Toby Hall didn't do. So I'm comfortable with sticking with Navarro if you're good with it.
Yeah, I think I might have meant John Jaso. Jason, I think that might be where that came from. But yeah, let's go with the guy who actually played the position and not the guy now that I'm remembering, I thought I was done. This was the last team of the 10 that I had done. And I realized at the end I didn't have a catcher listed. So I think that would be my haste there. So yes, let's go with what's his name?
Deonor Navarro.
Yes.
So our Rays starting nine, Deonor Navarro, Carlos Pena, Ben Zobrist, Evan Longoria, Julio Lugo, Carl Crawford, Kevin Kiermaier, BJ Upton, and David Price. And I believe it's my turn.
Yes, we have the Yankees and the Red Sox left. So we will be stepping up in class.
I dropped my pen. Hold on.
All right. I had Jason Bartlett again on both of these teams, too.
All right. So I'm going to go with the Yankees. And we should also note that in one of our very first episodes, we did an all-time Yankees starting all-time 30-man Yankees roster and all-time 30-man New York National League roster. So picking this Yankee team was very similar to picking that team. And here's what I went with: Yogi Berra, Lou Gehrig, Tony Lazzari, A-Rod at third base, Derek Jeter at short, Babe Ruth, Mickey Mantle, and Joe DiMaggio in the outfield, and Whitey Ford at pitcher.
The only one I had difference was I had Joe Gordon at second, but you can definitely talk me into Lazzari. No question about Berra over Dickey. Gehrig, there's no question. Jeter's, you know, one of the best shortstops of all time in terms of offense. He's up there in hits. A-Rod, as you know, whatever you want to say about A-Rod, the guy won multiple MVPs. I'm sorry, he had a better career just as a Yankee than Greg Nettles did. That's sort of one regret. You don't really have any late 70s representation on this team, but find me a spot where one should go. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's
the outfield, there's just no question. Ruth, Mantle, DiMaggio, I mean, three all-time greats. The pitcher, Whitey Ford, you know, none of the more modern guys did it for long enough. Ford won a Cy Young in 61. He was third in MVP in 63. Career postseason ERA quite a large sample size. Career postseason ERA is 2.71. Playing a lot of those games at Yankee Stadium and Ebbets Field, which were not exactly pitcher-friendly parks. You know, just really not too much from a question standpoint. I think I went with Gordon just by virtue of him winning the MVP in 49, right? That was the year he won the MVP, wasn't it?
42.
Or did I write 42? Oh, yeah, no, yeah, now I can't read my writing. Yep, 42.
42 was the year that Ted Williams won the Triple Crown and still did not win the MVP, in case you think that writers allowing their biases to factor into their MVP vote just started with sometime in the last 20 or 30 years. No, Ted Williams, Triple Crown winner, 1942. Joe Gordon still was named the MVP of the league. So that happened even then. So real quick on Berra and Dickey, I had Berra too. The thing that kind of does it for Berra is a couple things. First of all, three MVPs. He won MVPs in 51, 54, and 55. And Yankee fans, even Yankee fans, I should say, there's often this idea that maybe, you know, kind of went right from Mantle to DiMaggio, or from DiMaggio to Mantle. When the fact of the matter is, and I've said this on this podcast before, I'm sure, the player who was the glue of those five championship teams in a row from 49 to 53 was really Yogi Berra, because DiMaggio was getting old. And then in his first couple of years, Mantle was a promising young star, but hadn't become the Mantle that he would become. And so you got Berra winning an MVP in 51, winning an MVP in 54, winning an MVP in 55. And then by the mid 50s, Mantle is really starting to take over. So that's it with Berra for me. The winning, I mean, Berra's 10 World Series, the only player in North American sports who has more championships than Berra is Bill Russell. And I think that Sam Jones, Russell's teammate, might also have 10. I don't know if there's somebody in hockey who also has 10, but the only guy with more, the only guy with 11 is Russell. And so now Dickey, no slouch himself, Dickey won 8, but actually the batting numbers, you'd think that Berra would be a lot higher, but Dickey batted over 300 for his career. Berra did not. The offensive numbers are very, very close. It's hard to quantify defense because the Gold Glove didn't come along until the late 50s. And by that point, Dickey hadn't played in 15 years, and Berra was very much nearing the end of his career. So it is very, very close, and maybe not as close, maybe closer than some people think it is. There's probably a lot of people who think that Berra is just a no-brainer, but I think it's Berra by a nose.
And by the way, I was wrong. Tony Lazzara is the second baseman. I should not have written Gordon in. You look at Lazzara, he's got him beat longevity wise. You know, you got, yeah, the one MVP in a war, you know, in a war, one of the World War II seasons. It is Lazzara. I don't know what overtook me there. But you know, I think it definitely is Lazzara.
Yeah, he was on the team longer, 12 versus 7, higher batting average, 293 versus 271. Power numbers, home runs are similar. The book doesn't actually have RBIs. Lazzari's probably got him in RBIs because Lazzari was well known for being a really good RBI guy. So, yeah, I think Lazzari is the right call there. So we were very much in lockstep with this, except for one. And so it's Yogi Berra, Lou Gehrig, Tony Lazzari, Alex Rodriguez, Derek Jeter, Babe Ruth, Mickey Mantle, Joe DiMaggio, and Whitey Ford. And that just brings us to the Boston Red Sox.
All right. So it's my turn, right?
Indeed.
All right. Carlton Fisk at catcher. First baseman is Ortiz. Second baseman, Bobby Doerr. Shortstop, Nomar. Third base, Wade Boggs. Outfield, Ted Williams, Tris Speaker, Carl Yastrzemski, and then the pitcher, Pedro Martinez.
We disagree on two.
Okay.
Let's start with second base. You had Bobby Doerr.
Mm-hmm.
I went Pedroia.
Yeah, that's... There's probably a little biased in there just because I never watched Bobby Doerr play. He probably didn't have that look on his face when he played. So that's probably why I went with him. But I agree that Pedroia is a reasonable choice there.
Yeah.
But I don't want to dismiss Bobby Doerr either.
So 9-time All-Star Doerr, he is probably a deserving Hall of Famer. Let me look on Baseball Reference at his, you know, he's one of these guys who a lot of his Hall of Fame numbers are well below what you would expect. There's a you know, if you're a sort of a student of the Hall of Fame and the Veterans Committee, there was a period during the, I believe it was during the 70s and 80s. I don't have in front of me here. 86. Yeah. So in the 70s and 80s, where Ted Williams kind of took over the Veterans Committee and used it as the impetus to get a lot of his friends and former teammates in the Hall of Fame. It's widely considered that Bobby Doerr might be one of those. So the guy still, you know, he was an 8-time All-Star, spent his whole career with the Red Sox, just like Pedroia. He's got a lifetime batting average of .288. Pedroia's got a higher average of .299. Let's look at the WARs. 51.9 for Pedroia.
51.4
for Bobby Doerr. And that's 14 seasons for, got it, 14 seasons for each guy, too. That's really close. Bobby Doerr never came close to an MVP. The closest he came in the voting.
I don't think that's accurate.
Okay, so third in 46. Okay, so that's not terrible. And I think it was Williams that won it in 46.
So he finished in the top 10 a bunch of times too.
True. Pedroia. God, you know, Pedroia only appeared in MVP voting three different years. Here's basically what I think this is going to be. If you want to go longevity, it's Bobby Doerr. If you want to go sort of peak, couple of really good seasons, and if you somehow want to factor in championships, then to me it's Pedroia. So it's really, really close. It's really
close. What's the other disagreement?
The other disagreement I have with you is I had Clemens.
Over Pedro?
Yeah. Should we settle this one first?
Yeah, let's settle this one first. It is funny, by the way, to be using who won Cy Youngs as a way to determine who gets this when actual Cy Young is in the discussion on the exactly. Red Sox.
I got 90 years worth of Cy Youngs.
Who said that?
He could say that.
Oh, I thought it was like something he actually said.
No, I don't think they named it after him until he died.
Oh, okay. I'm pulling up Pedro's. Go ahead.
I guess do we want to go Doerr here just because he's in the Hall of Fame, even if he maybe doesn't necessarily deserve it, and Pedroia won't even come close to sniffing the Hall of Fame?
Yeah. All right, before we get to pitchers, any issue with Ortiz as a first baseman? He's got to be on the team. I think you got to give it to him there.
Yeah, and you, Yastrzemski, who played a lot of both, you could easily move him to the outfield with the other two. I was close between trying to figure out a way to get Jim Rice on there, who had some really good years in the 70s, including an MVP season in 78 and played for a very long time with the Red Sox. But you couldn't kick Ted Williams off, obviously. You really, people don't realize how great of a center fielder Tris Speaker was. He was also on our all-time Cleveland team. And I thought Yastrzemski, for all that he did, triple crown winner, all that stuff, had to be on there. So, yeah, I mean, Ortiz, should he have been a first ballot Hall of Famer? Maybe not, but you had to have him on there as the leader of those teams. And yeah, if he was going to be, the guy was a DH, just like Edgar Martinez for Seattle. You can't pretend he wasn't a DH, but the rules that we've set up mean that you got to find a position for him.
And I was surprised Nomar makes it. Not that he doesn't deserve to, but I wouldn't have thought, as I'm looking at this, I wouldn't have thought that, like, if you asked me, was he the best shortstop all time in Red Sox history? I'd have been like, I don't know, probably not. He didn't have the career he was supposed to, but it is Nomar.
Yeah, it is. It is.
All right. Shall we do pitching?
So Pedro, three Cy Youngs in 4 years.
Well, the first one was in Montreal.
But... Okay. So two Cy Youngs in 99 and 2000. Clemens, seven career Cy Youngs, three with Boston. Clemens was in Boston for 13 years. Pedro, essentially half that, 7 years. Let me see games started here. 201 for Pedro, 382 for Clemens. Clemens was on the Red Sox longer. He won more Cy Youngs. ERA 3.06 in Boston. Pedro's is half a run lower. It's 2.52. I feel like Pedro probably put up more seasons in Boston when he was head and shoulders above everybody else. But I also feel like it didn't necessarily last super long. So why don't you make the case for Pedro?
So Pedro from 98 to 04 is a Red Sox, except for 01 where he's hurt. Second in Cy Young, first in Cy Young, first in Cy Young, that he's hurt in 01. 02, he's second. He's third in 03. He's fourth in 04. He pitches in three postseasons for them. He wins a World Series in 03. He's... This is not easy for me to say. That run he had is the closest thing we've seen to Sandy Koufax over a 7 or 8 year period. Factoring in the era, I mean, some of those numbers I was just reading were 1999, 2000, 2001, 2002, the steroid era, pitching in the American League East and pitching to a, let's just go through the ERAs by year here, if I can pull that up. ERA by, I'll do the records in ERAs, the years he was with the Red Sox. 98, he was 19 and 7 with a 2.89. 99, he's 23 and 4 with a 2.07. 2000, 18 and 6 with a 1.74 ERA in 2000. 01, he's hurt, but he's still 7 and 3 with 2.39. 02, 20 and 4, 2.26. 03, 14 and 4, 2.22. And then 04, 16 and 9 with a 3.90. So that's the only year he's as a Red Sox that his ERA is above 3. It's his only year as a Red Sox that his ERA is above 2.3. He was the best pitcher in baseball year in and year out for 8 years or 7 years that he was a Red Sox. If we're going to talk about numbers, then yeah, Clemens was better. If we're going to talk about, and this is one of those, it doesn't really have an answer, you know, because it's like, it's not, oh, who would you want to win one game? Because then you could go with, you know, you could go with a guy who's on the team for 1 year. It's not, well, who has the most wins? It's one of the most dominant pitchers in baseball over a 15-year span versus the most dominant pitcher in baseball over an 8-year span. I don't really know how to quantify that, but I think Pedro is the guy.
Clemens was an 80.8 WAR in his 13 years. So that's like, what, just over 6. And that's, and WAR for pitching is a little bit wonky sometimes. Pedro,
but it's going to be wonky the same way, probably. So
Pedro was 53.8 in 7 years. So he was at like 7.5. So yeah, I mean, maybe I'm slightly.
I won't fight you on it if you want to go with Clemens, but this isn't one where I'm going to say, oh, I agree, you're right. I just won't fight you on it if you want to go with Clemens.
Yeah, I mean, Clemens was. I'm sort of feel the same way in that I don't know how much I would fight it. I'm fine with Pedro. Those few years. The only thing that would have made those few years better is if he had won a championship when he was sort of already on the downward slope in 04 when they won that championship. In fact, he left for the Mets the following year because that's what, you know, old players do once they have already won a championship. They go play for the Mets. but
he was all right with the Mets. No, he's actually was, no fun.
He was pretty good with the Mets. Yeah, that's funny. That's another team that's like, you know, there's a story or something there. You figure that 05, 06 Met team with him, Glavin, I think El Duque was on that team. It was, you know, you got some really interesting, and then even in the lineup, Cliff Floyd, Beltran. It was really a very interesting couple of years for those Mets teams with Willie Randolph as the manager. They blew some pennants too. So, yeah, you know what? I can accept Pedro. I can accept Pedro. So, all right. So you talked me out of two there. So our final nine for the Red Sox: Carlton Fisk, David Ortiz, Bobby Doerr, Wade Boggs, Nomar Garciaparra, Ted Williams, Carl Yastrzemski, Tris Speaker, and Pedro Martinez. We usually rank these, and I actually don't think it's going to be that difficult. Razor 5.
Blue Jays are 4.
Blue Jays are 4. Baltimore is 3.
Baltimore might be the best 3. We haven't gone like, but might be the best 3, but they're also a distant 3.
Yeah, we've had some good 3s. The Washington team that we were surprised about was a good 3. Cincinnati was a good 3. The White Sox were a good 3. We've had some good 3s. So it's Red Sox 2, Yankees 1.
Yes.
I have two questions for you. One of which I meant to raise when we were doing the Yankees, and one of which is you know, more general. He's not close, obviously. Is Judge the number 4 outfielder for the Yankees right now?
Well, let's talk out who some of them would be. Reggie was only there 5 years. Judge has already been there longer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Reggie hit the 3 home runs in game 7 in 77. Yeah. And you might have heard about it. Maris obviously had some very, very good years. Bernie Williams was there a long time, won a batting title, won all those, World Series. You know, I might have Bernie 4 at this point. I'd have to think through it, but you're right. I think Judge gets him. I think it's anybody from older eras that I'm not thinking of that would belong in the discussion.
Earl Combs, who was the center fielder on the Yankees of the 20s and 30s and is in the Hall of Fame. He's another one. But let me put it this way. I strongly feel that if DiMaggio or Mantle or Ruth had never existed, putting aside the fact that the Yankees wouldn't be the Yankees, blah, 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 and we were doing this right now, we'd pick Judge. We would pick Judge.
Maybe
with a slight degree of recency bias, but we'd pick Judge.
Now, how many home runs would he have to end up with to end up on this list?
Well, you know, it's funny. He's probably
to pass what would probably be Joe DiMaggio.
So he's probably already got more home runs than DiMaggio. DiMaggio had 361 career home runs. Okay, Judge has got 257, so he's not passing.
I'm not saying how many home runs would he have to get to pass somebody. I'm saying, I mean, obviously he does other things as a player, but like, is it possible for him to have a better career than Joe DiMaggio? Is it already too late? I'm not saying probable or likely or anything, but like, if the guy hits 700 home runs, would that put him over Joe DiMaggio? I think he's going.
If he hits 700, yeah. If he hits 600, probably. The hard thing with DiMaggio is two things. First of all, the war. And he not the wins above replacement.
Well, damn it. I was going to make a dumb joke, but you were actually talking about the thing I was going to make a dumb joke about.
The fact that he served
just because he was Italian doesn't mean he was on the other side.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
So that's the one thing, is that how much do you count those 3 years, which were definitely in his prime, because he won an MVP in the early 40s. He won an MVP in the late 40s. So it's not crazy to assume. There's a book by Joe Posnanski, who you've probably heard out, that came, it came out about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago now, called The Baseball 100, where he lists, you know, 100 greatest baseball players of all time. And he makes a point that it's a really good point. He's like, the difference between injuries and other things is that guys don't stop being great players just because they're not playing. And he put it in the context of segregation, but he also put it in the context of World War II. Williams, DiMaggio, Feller, those guys didn't stop being great players just because they weren't able to play. So that's the hard thing with DiMaggio. The other hard thing with DiMaggio, and Mantle too for that matter, but I think DiMaggio would be the first one to fall off, is the winning. You know, now I know it's a different era and it's all that stuff, and this is maybe where we get a little bit of arrogant Yankee fans going, but like, winning championships
right now, we're being arrogant against another Yankee, so it's
but winning championships is such an essential element of what it means to be a great Yankee that if it was close, Judge would have to outpace him by a considerable amount.
No, that was just a thing that popped in my head. I'm not suggesting it's going to happen or that it's close. I'm just saying it's, you know, it was just a thought that was in my head.
And my other question is, and I think I'm wrong about this because this might be, although the Yankees with A-Rod's steroid, this Yankee team, were it not for A-Rod's issues, might be the only one with 9 Hall of Famers. 9 guys who would be in the Hall of Famers based just on their numbers. I'm not going to go back and look at the last 4 weeks that or 4 episodes that we've done, but Nomar never makes it. So the Red Sox only have 8. And I don't know, there might have been 1 or 2 other teams. But there were places where I thought the Red Sox team was closer to the Yankees than I thought. I think Pedro blows Whitey Ford out of the water. Williams is better than Mantle or DiMaggio, probably. And Speaker, the outfield is a lot closer than you might think. I don't know. Speaker's not better than DiMaggio. I don't know that Williams isn't better than Mantle. Where they lose is shortstop, where Jeter, despite the fact that they were considered sort of equals for a little while, Jeter's obviously so much better than Nomar. Gehrig gets it over Ortiz by a decent amount. Fisk only played half his career with the Red Sox, even if that was the best half of his career. So it's not, I won't make an argument for Boston, but it's closer than you might think.
It's close, but it's not by a hair either.
I agree.
It's a 10-point victory in football.
I'm a Giant fan. I don't know what those are like. So, so our final Yankees
victories are 10-point margins.
So Yogi Berra, Lou Gehrig, Tony Lazzari, Alex Rodriguez, Derek Jeter, Babe Ruth, Mickey Mantle, Joe DiMaggio, Whitey Ford are number one for the New York Yankees, joining the Detroit Tigers, the Atlanta Braves, the St. Louis Cardinals, and the Oakland Athletics in our 5 victors so far. I'm not going to go through the lineups of all the teams that have won because we'll do that all on our next episode. But this was fun, and we're going to take a little break and record our NL West episode, and you'll hear that one probably a week or so after you hear this one. So thanks for joining us. This has been fun, and until the NL West, I'm Dan Newman.
And I'm Andrew Newman. Goodbye, old sports.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Join George Bozica, the president of the PFRA, and myself, John Bozica, each month for the Professional Football Researchers Association official podcast. We'll discuss the history of the game, the many names of the game, and so many different things for you, making the history of football not only entertaining, but fun at the same time, as we join you on the Sports History Network on the official PFRA podcast.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.